Welcome to the Midday.
I'm Vicki. That's Norman. And we have a trumpeter from Florida, and we've arranged for special weather for you.
It's make you feel at home.
Christopher right, Moore, who I understand hails from Green Bay?
Well, actually, my mother does.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in Florida, but my mother is a member of the Oneida tribe and now lives in Oneida, mm-hmm. where she also works with the tribe. So I've been up here a number of times.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And you're up here this time to perform with the Green Bay Civic Symphony, a piece that you commissioned, I understand.
Correct. This is a piece that I had a genesis of an idea about 5 years ago to find a piece that was a concerto written for trumpet that incorporated Native American elements, of which there are none. There were none at that time. And I wanted the piece written that reflected Native American culture and also was written by a Native American. And so I received a grant from Florida State, and I also received a matching grant from the Oneida Nation Arts Program, and went to work to find a composer, Brent Michael Davids, who is a Mohegan who lives in Minneapolis area, who's written for a lot of major groups, the National Symphony, Chanticleer, and Kronos Quartet, just to name a few. And he was very agreeable to write this piece. And I spent time researching the music of the Oneidas and shared that information with him. And Brent, being a Mohegan, which is part of the Iroquois Federation, mm-hmm. as are the Oneidas, he mm-hmm. was familiar with Iroquois music and tradition. And he and I spent a few days together in Minneapolis and talked about ideas. And I took my horns and played for him. Mm-hmm. And we sat in his studio for a long time trying to figure out different things that I could do with the piece, and it all came together, and the piece was finally completed a couple years ago. And since then, I premiered the piece with the Florida State Orchestra, and the dream is finally coming true, and in that the initial grant proposal was to play the piece in Green Bay at Oneida for the people of Oneida. And now that's coming to fruition.
We don't usually think of the trumpet as being a Native American compatible or traditional instrument.
Right, and that was part of the trick, was how to get that to happen, because most people think about Native American flute
mm-hmm. yes.
comes to mind typically first. And interestingly, I play flugelhorn, which some people may be familiar with. It's a larger trumpet that has a darker sound. And I use that twice in the piece. In fact, we'll hear it a little bit in this time. And I play it with the effect of a Native American flute.
Hmm.
And so with some of the fall-offs and things of that sort. So I had to be educated by him, because Brent is a Native flute player as well. And so he calls it the flutal horn. So we incorporate that into it.
Sounds very, very atmospheric. We should maybe first hear just the sound of you and your instrument in a piece that it probably has very little, if anything, to do with Native American sounds.
By a Russian composer.
Right, Rodion Shchedrin. Yeah, this is a great piece. It's a short piece that I use to open a lot of programs. It's a very exciting work that was, it's called In the Style of Albanez, and very Spanish overtones to it.
Was an interesting effect at the end.
And it was so much the style of Isaac Albéniz that you'd have trouble guessing who the composer was who was
yeah.
writing that. Russian, Rodion Shchedrin.
And the trumpeter was our guest, Chris Moore today, who's playing with the Green Bay Civic Symphony Orchestra.
This weekend. And tonight you're playing that piece with the pianist we heard there, Seth Beckman.
Correct,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So a recital in Madison at 6:30 in the
mm-hmm.
Humanities Building.
right.
tonight, and pieces that you're going to be releasing on a CD soon.
Right. Actually, the entire recital, I'm doing four pieces on the recital, and three of those are on a CD, on the CD that will come out in August. One of them is that piece that you just heard. We're doing a version of Trumpeting the Stone with piano. So you'll get a taste of that. And then another piece that I recently recorded is a piece by Edward Gregson, the trumpet concerto that he wrote, and it has yet to be recorded. And so this will be the first recording of that piece. So it's pretty standard work that hasn't been put on CD yet. So,
well, congratulations.
It's gonna happen, yeah, in August. So we'll be doing that tonight as well.
A lot of good trumpet concertos coming out every year, it seems.
Yeah. A lot of composers are stepping up and really exploring the boundaries of what the horn can do. And it's great stuff.
Well, let's move to the flutelhorn.
The flutelhorn, that's right.
With this piece called Trumpeting the Stone, and maybe you could describe where the title came from, first of all.
Well, the Oneida people are known as people of the Standing Stone. And that's where the title came from, is from the basis and the roots of the Oneida culture. And so Brent took that from the Oneida tradition and entitled the piece Trumpeting the Stone, for the people of the Standing Stone.
And we have a couple of excerpts from your performance at Florida of these, and we're going to hear the opening.
Correct. And what you'll hear here in the opening of the piece is it's kind of like, well, if you were to visualize, I mean, the dawning of a day, and it starts, the orchestra builds, there's great color in the orchestra, the harp you'll hear very prominently as a big part in the piece, and it leads to the opening kind of haunting theme on the flutelhorn.
Trumpeting the Stone. Well, I see what you mean now by accomplishing some of the flute-like effects with a...
Right.
I can't remember the term you used, like the dying or the twisting of the turning.
Right, the
of
falling the, off.
Falling off.
Right,
there we go,
notes,
yes.
Yeah.
It has an outdoor quality to it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens then in the next movement?
Well, the next section of the piece is the main theme. I go to a C trumpet now, which is more prominent in sound. And... it's a hopeful theme. It's very energetic. So we go from the reflective nature here at the beginning of the piece to a very energized section, which Brent wrote. And when I first got a copy of it, we had to go back and do more consulting because it wasn't very idiomatic for the instrument.
Well, that's been often a problem.
Might have worked
for the violin. Often a problem.
I'll never forget my phone conversation with him. I said, Brent, I said, you know, that's pretty difficult what you wrote, and I'm not so sure that it's going to be possible. He said, well, you're the Grammy winner. Why can't you play it?
Even
said,
Grammy
well,
winners
yeah,
have their
I limits. Have limitations, believe me. So the orchestra's playing a very marked rhythmic theme, and then he has me doing this obbligato over the top of it, which is quite challenging. So that's the next section.
Raises an interesting question. When Dvorak wrote his New World Symphony and his string quartet, his American quartet, even today there's this controversy about, well, these are American Indian elements in it, or these aren't. So what would you point to as some of the other Native American elements of this piece?
Well, some of the things that that he's put in the piece are later in the piece. The next section that comes up is it's a march, because brass bands, believe it or not, figured prominently, particularly with the Oneidas, because in an attempt to Americanize Indians, they were sent to boarding schools. And one of the things that happened with the Oneida Nation is that many of the members were sent to Carlisle, Pennsylvania. And some of the what happened there is they had musical training in Western instruments, and so they got experience on brass instruments. And they became very good at playing the brass instruments, and they took this back with them to the Oneida tribe, and they established a great band tradition in Oneida, believe it or not.
That's little known, I would venture to say. That's the first I'd heard.
And there are photos there in the Oneida Museum and copies that I have of the Oneida band members at the turn of the century. I mean, these bands rivaled those bands of the Sousa era and would go compete throughout the country with all the bands at that time. And so there is this tradition. And so Brent, I asked him to incorporate some of that brass band. And so he did put that into the piece, a march that's in there, which is interesting. Another tradition of the Oneidas is the Oneida hymn singing. And this is something that is truly Oneida, in that the Oneida singers at the turn of the century, even in the 1700s, Protestant hymns that were heard, brought over by the missionaries, and they incorporated the melodies of Protestant hymns, but in the Oneida language. And even today, the Oneida singers are very active. It's all basically an oral tradition. And so one of those hymns is incorporated into the piece. It works out beautifully. And I'm really very appreciative. The Oneida singers are going to be singing in my performance this weekend.
Wow,
and
that'll be quite the show.
It's
really
going to be special. When we did the piece in Florida State, we had the university singers do it, of course, not quite the same. So they had to learn the language and sing the hymn in the language. And now we're going to be having it with the actual Oneida singers singing.
Well, that's fantastic. Without those southern accents.
Right. Well, and so I brought examples of the Oneida hymn, as well as, I guess we can start with the march.
Let's have the march.
Do a little bit of that. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful stuff there. Those singers and the trumpet
remarkable?
With wonderful counterpoint. And lovely.
Very tricky writing, and fortunately we had a great recording engineer that got it all to happen.
Captured that balance.
Captured it all. Yeah, so it's a great effect.
Now, moving on in this, there is also another, some more Oneida singing.
Right. There's a social dance, and it's a longhouse song. This is a social dance, which is this one that's used as a robin dance. And basically the dance imitates a robin looking for food for her babies. And it involves dancing forward and dancing backwards and bringing the worms up.
I was going to ask about that.
Feed.
No, I shouldn't ask about that.
Well,
that is part of it.
That's what it's all about. And the song is, it's a Robin dance is meant to lift the spirits. So to put you in a better mood. It realizes that you're going to have down times, and the Robin dance, it's a social dance that is meant to invigorate you and bring you back. And he uses this this Robin dance in the finale of the piece, which to musicians, the final page of this piece uses a lot of mixed meter. So it's not, it goes from a very steady pulse to kind of a mixed pulse, and it's very invigorating at the very end. So I have an example of the social song that he uses, and then the finale of the piece where you can hear the Robin dance in the piece.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is Christopher Moore and the Florida State University Symphony Orchestra.
Yo ho, yo, yo ho, we hey, 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 yo.
Well, somebody's in for a great time.
For a concert on Saturday night in Green Bay. It's at the Meyer Theater. You say it's a wonderfully
restored. Yeah, great place.
Green Bay. And it's the Green Bay Civic Symphony. And the concert's at 7:30. And the concert will include this piece by Brent Michael Davids, Trumpeting the Stone. Also, that work we mentioned earlier, Dvorak's New World Symphony No. 9, so that will be a good time. And if you're in Madison, catch the recital tonight at 6:30 in the Humanities Building. Christopher Moore, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much. Been a pleasure.